That was said in jest. DG?
Thank you very much, Chair. We are now in the space to deal with the issue of the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. That's going to be a long one. The process, the grievance process was addressed, as I had indicated. I think when we were here last time, I said I had just received the report from the investigating officer. I had not had an opportunity to read it. I then committed to going back and reading it, which I went back and I did. The report raised a number of issues, which I'm not going to be able to deal with each one of them, but certainly it made certain recommendations. I then convened a meeting of all those who are affected by the report, and I handed them a high-level summary report, the executive summary of that report. Each one of the people who had grieved against the Chief State Law Advisor, and I also met the Chief State Law Advisor a day thereafter, and I gave him the report as well. Subsequent to that, I gave them an opportunity to then comment on the report, which they all did. I then set about writing the report myself, in other words, the conclusion, my own conclusion on the matter, which I did. And the final report, well, my findings, or at least my decision, was then given on the 12th, I think it was 12th of December last year. So we, for all intents and purposes, then concluded the matter. After that, I understand, and of course they won't come back to me, but after that, with all my recommendations, which I also informed the minister about, I also informed the Public Service Commission about those that decision. After that, then the colleagues in that office who were aggrieved then wrote to the minister indicating that they are not satisfied with the outcome, which we had already anticipated they would not be, and to the extent that they were not satisfied, then the matter had to be escalated. The matter was escalated. We subsequently met with the minister, who wanted just clarity on the issues, which we provided, and for all intents and purposes, he then has to consider the and finalize on this matter. So that's basically where we are. But you would recall also that concurrent with this process, some not all 14, 5 of the 14 who had been aggrieved had also applied to court for a certain interdicting them not to be moved out of their offices. So we also attended to that process, and whilst the court case has not been heard as yet, we have filed all the papers, but I can assure this Honourable House that the people who were affected, there were 14 minus 2, so the 12. 12 of the 14, as far as my decision is concerned, went back to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and they are now working in the Chief State Law Advisor's office, receiving work from the Chief State Law Advisor. 2 of the 14, I have had to redeploy them elsewhere because they are directly affected by the court application that I've just spoken about. One of them I have redeployed in my office, and these redeployments are temporary until the final court case is finalized. So one of them is deployed in my office, and the other is deployed in the office of the Chief Operations Officer. And we are then observing the space and waiting for absolute finalization of the case. But people are at work, as the concern was whether they are working or not. People are at work, and they are working. The tone of the resolution that I had concluded on was I had concluded that the dispute had been going on for a while, but in an actual fact, the dispute that I received was a dispute that had been going on for years with these officials. So to the extent that my resolution was such that people are able to go back to work and do their work, and that was my primary consideration, that people must be at work and must be able to do their work, and indeed they are at work doing the work. There are other complaints which I am currently dealing with, but to the extent that that matter has been finalized at my level, I can confirm that the matter has not been finalized at my level. Thank you.
Well, there was a question about whether the state organizers' office is here in Cape Town.
Which was that they were sitting idle and not receiving work, not so. So just this resolution that you described, and the fact that they are now getting work, but how does that affect it if the situation of Mr. Daniels in Cape Town was the origin of the problem?
Is he in Cape Town or is he now in Pretoria? JJ, you want to follow up?
Yes, because other issues that he can respond to.
All right, let's finish this.
To the extent that officials are receiving work, part of the resolution was that a protocol around work distribution be developed and be accepted, and then work must be distributed according to that protocol, so that it is transparent who gets what work. That is already happening. I can confirm that it is happening. And of course, part of the resolution was that people must be reintegrated back into the branch, which has happened, except for the two that I've just alluded to. And to the extent, well, I may not have understood the cause of the dispute being the fact that the Chief State Law Advisor was in Cape Town. It was but one of the many complaints that was raised, but it wasn't the name to the dispute. To the extent that the Chief State Law Advisor is currently sitting in Cape Town, indeed he's sitting in Cape Town, and that was one of the issues that was raised. He is still sitting in Cape Town as we speak, but he does go to Pretoria for every expo that we have. Sometimes we do video conferencing, sometimes he attends in person. The real reason for the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor and the person of the Chief State Law Advisor having been in Cape Town was, at least I was made to understand, that was a historical issue which had arisen because of the type of support that he needed to have provided to Parliament. Excuse me. So in the absence of wanting to disrupt that service, direct service that he offered to Parliament, I then felt that at that stage it wasn't necessary for us to uproot him and to send him back to head office. However, it was concluded that as we conclude on the transformation of state human services, we will then revisit his being in Cape Town within the total context of transformation of state human services. So may I then conclude on this basis? When it comes to specific questions that were raised, whether the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor is part of the transformation of state legal services, indeed it is. It is but very critical to the transformation of state legal offices, that office, and so it will be part of it. Similarly, the state attorney and legislation and Chief Litigation Office, as well as the Family Advocate. Those are the offices that we've looked at for a particular reason, and let me not then delve into too much detail on it, but those are the offices that we were looking at quite fundamentally.
May we note one thing? It was an historical anomaly that at the start, at the beginning of the first Democratic Parliament, the state law advisors tended to come and sit in with portfolio committees and work with them. That is, of course, in essence, quite wrong. The state law advisors advise the government, and while Parliament in that state did hardly had any law, but we should have our own, we do now have a state. But it is also the case that in many cases, quite fruitful relationships have developed between state law advisors and certain committees. So it is not the custom here, as a matter of principle, not to allow that, whereas it did in fact used to be an issue directly after 1994. So that is something that you may wish to take into account. Do you see? Although the chief special advisor advising government, one would think, could sit in Pretoria.
Then, Chair, we then move to the issue of ICC, and in particular focusing our attention.
We then move to the issues of ICT, but in particular focusing on the 7-point plan, which arose out of the review of the criminal justice system. Specific questions that we raised related to progress in terms of some of the systems, as well as the role of the IJS board. And there was something that was said which I didn't quite say it in that way, so I wish to clarify what I said. With respect to the role of the DGs of the cluster in relation to IJS board, I said we now meet, because the cluster meets once a month, every month, the first Tuesday of the month. We now receive as DGs a report from the IJS board coordinator. So that's just the clarification I wanted to bring to that. But what we have, and what I have personally presented to the DGs in relation to the IJS board was an appeal to the DGs for DGs to be able in their respective exco's to start taking reports from IJS board and looking at the expenditure trends, looking at projects and plans and whether the project plans were on track in terms of delivery of the projects that are IJS projects. So that is already in place. Whether it's happening in other departments, I can't attest to that. What I then did say was that in our department, which is the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, we do sit twice a month, and that's what I said, twice a month. And during this twice a month, one extra week, we deal with operational issues to us, and one extra week, we deal with reporting issues. Now, where we deal with operational issues on the projects and budgets and all of those things, that's when we take the IJS budget. So if you the IJS program, so at least once a month we'll be able to discuss it, but sometimes we discuss it more than once a month. Are there any systems between ourselves and the NPA that are already operational? Indeed, they are ECNS from the NPA, and some aspects of the ICNS, the ICNS from the Department of Justice are already talking. To the extent that they are, we are also having systems that are already talking between ourselves, staff, and NPA. There has been considerable development, and I just need to say this because maybe the impression that is being given is not entirely accurate. There has been considerable development in the SAP site. The SAP site is the entry level of the web in the criminal justice system. So the development must by design start at SAP. So they've developed quite considerably if you compare them to everybody else in the cluster, because they are the beginning point. They've done the portal in terms of which all the information must be logged on and must be stored in the portal and must be translated and be given to all of us. So that portal is already in place. It's quite a useful portal if we were all at this stage able to tap onto the portal. And what we are then saying as the cluster and as DGs is that we must hurry up, all of our departments must hurry up and create this template so that we can start feeding information into the portal and being able to draw information from the portal. So that platform is already there, and I say individual departments have also developed to a have been expressed, particularly the Department of Justice and NPA has also, we have also developed systems that connect us to their portals. There is a slight problem with correctional services, and it's a problem that is not just because the project is not within their line of sight. Our understanding of why they have had to suspend their relationship, this project in particular, and trying to connect to the system, has only been because they are facing their other systems. Apparently, they have established that most of their systems needed something or the other, which then entitled them to say, let them not go so far in advancing the development of this until they had fixed other things. So I'm not a technical person, but in other words, they see it, but they are busy fixing other things so that when they come to connect, then they can connect. So that's the English version of what I think they're saying. So in a nutshell, therefore, we are quite comfortable now as a class that this project called IJS is now within our line of sight as DGs. In fact, what we've done is we have not only limited it to ourselves in the criminal justice system, strictly speaking. We've also connected Home Affairs. You would have heard earlier when I spoke about the MOVIT system in the master environment. We are already working in the master system where we are checking information from the ACs in the Home Affairs environment and being able to confirm the fingerprints, yes, the fingerprints and all of that. We are already using the system. I mean, those members would have gone to either to the Maritzburg or Pretoria, you would have been able to test whether MOVIT is working or not working. But we brought in SARS in the program, more specifically because SARS has been very successful in developing and deploying systems. And so we've brought SARS to also assist us and help us in project managing some of the work that we are doing, and we are very grateful for the support they are giving us as we speak. But in addition, we are also bringing in science and technology, because we do believe science and technology has a very big role to play in assisting us in the criminal justice system. So we have a whole program then of work that identifies like your unique person identifier, your CCMS cases, your ECMS persons, and all of those things. We've got a whole program of work which we anticipate to complete year on year, so that at least by 2014, we believe that 2014, we believe that the system will then be working completely within the criminal justice system. There is a lot of investment that has gone into, which is, we believe, it's sound investment, because we've built all of these portals and all of these systems, but we do believe that the work that is still needed to be done is still a lot. So we can't say within this year or even early into the new year you will see everything working perfectly, but there are some areas that are already working. I just thought that would be, I don't know whether there are going to be. Then in speaking to the issues that were raised in DJT Mojapelo's letter about dimension data, about transcripts, I don't know whether you want to speak to that. Thank you.
Well, Chair, I think that's, thank you, with your permission, perhaps I can deal with the rest of the issues that the DG has later on indicated that I need to respond to. But firstly, starting with the question raised by the Honourable Swart, giving a new name now. And that is in relation to the... this is in relation to the Buchabelo Magistrate Office and the concern raised about the continuation of the interventions that we started. It is indeed true that we had a team that was working in Buchabelo to try and improve the financial management in there. And I think as a consequence of that, contract, we had people that were appointed on contract. But as you know, that these contracts come to an end at the end of the financial year, which was the situation in this case. So just to ensure that there is continuation on that particular project, we had allowed that I think about 3 officers that were on contract to remain behind as part of the intervention to ensure that the sustainability to the interventions had been done. Now, the leader of that project, which was Ms. Pretorius, we had now made an arrangement that I think she should oversee a much broader aspect of the course, not only focusing on the intervention in the Uchabera. That's why she has now been withdrawn back to the Bloemfontein office, just to ensure that we can service the entire province. But as far as your concern in terms of the continuity of the or sustainability of the interventions that have been done, it is something that I physically went down to that court and make sure that at least what we have started does not go back again, and make sure that the entire court management takes the full responsibility, which also includes the financial management. So I think we are important as far as that particular issue is concerned. So I just wanted also maybe just to, before I get to the specific answer that, I mean, question that the DG wanted me to answer, just to add some of the issues that the DG has raised around the questions raised by Ms. Sheffner. And that relates to the interventions or maintenance strategy. I think part of what we haven't mentioned is that as this project on the turnaround strategy is rolled out to a number of course, I think about 19, the total package that we have put around there was also to ensure that we get the appropriate appointments. As you know, the current system is that we utilize clerks to perform maintenance work, which requires some level of understanding of the law. So as part of this intervention, we have also appointed what we call maintenance officers who are legally qualified, who would ensure that you know, the kind of services that we provide at least are performed by officials that have the knowledge of the law, other than the maintenance investigators, which is also part of the issue that addresses the lack of information when people come to our courts as complainants, not having the greater detail of information that is going to be required for courts to make decision upon it. So we have also, in addition to the maintenance officers, appointed what we call maintenance investigators who then assist the complainants when they come to our doorstep to ask for services. Chair, then, just in relation to the issue of the, just to add perhaps to what the DG has said in relation to the register for sexual offences, I think there was a question as to whether the capturing is done on an ongoing basis. It is true, we are doing that. Even though I think that the initial phase one, which we call, the steps were not as comprehensive as it was, and also in terms of the numbers. But I can tell you now that I think since the introduction of this particular intervention, we are recording this on a regular basis. And we have to speak, we have, I think, to date recorded since from 2009, 2,340 convictions in terms of that register. And the second phase, which was linked to the assistance that we're supposed to get from the police, as you know, I think when we reported to you previously, we indicated that there were some challenges around the capacity of the police to give us that assistance. But I'm glad also to announce that, since from last year, through the intervention of the DG with the commissioner, I think there's been a level of improvement in that regard. And I think at the 31st of December last year, we have received, purified historical data, which amounts to about 39,684 of the convictions that I think from the system that are generated by the police. So at least the system has started, though we are teasing problem, but as we speak at the moment, I think there is a level of improvement in relation to that.
Sorry, sir. Since the 2009, the figures, the 2340, is that the total number of convictions for sexual offences that there have been?
That you've registered, yeah.
But is that all that there have been or not? So are you up to date from 2009 to now with all convictions for sexual offences?
Yes, from 2009, yeah.
Is that all?
But what I'm just saying is that the historical data, which I think we're not capturing the historical data of previous convictions, and that information as well is now available. And that's the figure that I've just given, the 39,684.
So you're going to be capturing that now?
Yes, we're busy capturing that as we speak at the moment.
Thanks.
Then the other issue relating to, I hope that perhaps I can speak to the head of the CEO with regard to the regional office in because he's in charge of that particular process. But what I just wanted to maybe add, I think is a concern raised around the digital recording system at the South Gauteng High Court.
Okay.
I must say, generally, the High Courts are in a much better position in terms of the infrastructure that we have made available on digital recording system, because I think as part of this intervention, they have, I think, with an involvement, a phase one, that enable that all information that is captured, in terms of the court proceedings is available, as and when is required. So we do have that facility that enables them to get the running transcripts. But of course, at some time it's done overnight, because what we normally have to do is that we have to load in the records overnight, and then that gets transported to the service provider for transcription and so on. So, but it's something that is available. The only challenge, I think, is what you have picked up is the consistency in terms of the skills that are required to manage those machines, let alone the technical problems that we encounter as far as the maintenance of the system itself. And I think as part of our intervention, we've also tried now, as far as the High Courts are concerned, to create what we call the IT support system that is much closer, so that whenever the people pick up problems, they don't have to wait for a longer period to deal with that particular issue. So we have, I think, as far as Gauteng is concerned, created positions of what we call IT coordinators, which I think in terms of their main functions is to make sure that they do support the infrastructure that they've made available in terms of ensuring that these issues are addressed as soon as possible. But I think specifically for the South Gauteng, I think there we have an intervention that we're still focusing. I think you know that part of the issues were in relation to the missing records that we still have to reconstruct. But also part of that intervention is also to ensure that the current system as it now obtains, there is some level of capacity to ensure that at least, firstly, the recording is done properly, and that if there are problems with regard to the capturing of that data, at least there is some training that is given to. So there's some kind of functional training that has been done to people that have been appointed as DCRS clerks. And perhaps maybe it's an issue that we can just follow that specific intervention, the issue that has not been raised, just to see exactly that we can respond to it in a more eloquent way and give you some kind of written response to that. Okay, then I think if I can just move a bit.
This is how it was conveyed to us. In 2008, the server in the court was stolen. That's the server you're referring to. I don't know whether that stolen server had been replaced. That's the first thing. The second thing is that in terms of the overhaul of that particular court, a contractor called Mela WMELA are responsible for doing some kind of work there. DJP Mojapelo's complaint is that when a judge wants to access a court record, they are unable to do so. Because MELA Investments scan the files and then remove them. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I do understand that a judge not being able to access a court record is a serious thing. I'm inclined to think it's even possibly unlawful. Then that judge's hands are tied. And these things are taken, what do they say, mid-rand?
The one point was that the whole object was when a copy stays behind the original host in the brand, which is fine,
yeah,
in theory. The problem then was is that there seemed to have been, from what they told us, I think it was DJP, that they had a ceiling of documents that they could scan. And once they'd scanned that, they then just kept removing the documents without scanning them. And I don't know how one could get into that position, how that could arise. I mean, presumably, if there was an agreement with Mela or whoever that you will scan X number of thousand documents, then whose bright idea was it to allow them just to remove the documents if they hadn't, if they weren't scanning them?
My intention was that we would actually ask Melee Investments to appear before. It was really DJP Mojaka that was quite angry. He was very constrained before us, but beneath that constraint I could see anger. And it's understandable.
But please, now that's one problem. It's not in fact the direct problem, which Advocate Jani would also, he was answering the two. I think what happened in the other case was the contract was for X million pesos. Once they had the stuff off-site in mid-rand, they discovered the contract and the fee negotiator didn't cover it. So they kept all the stuff, locked them up, and it then took time for the department to negotiate extra money with Treasury before they resumed. They still haven't resumed, have they? And the stuff was all shipped out to Randfontein or mid-rand or whatever. Partially because the National Archives have run out of space and the Registrar can't send old documents there anymore, and that's why the stuff is lying in the passage. It's all an unholy mess. But that's the one problem. Why the contract wasn't properly constructed is, I think, is the problem. The immediate problem is what appears in the Deputy Just President's letter, and it describes what is going on now. They have acquired equipment from, look at this D-data here, so we're going to call it D-data and not necessarily confuse it with Di-data, because Di-data is one seriously heavyweight company. It's not, but is it Di-data? It is, okay, alright, it is Di-data. That is one seriously big company and efficient in other fields, in all fields. Now, what is going on now? What I'm saying is, we're talking pilot error once again, which is, as Gajani has just confirmed, the people operating the equipment, he just confirmed that I surmised correctly. Because what is going on now, if you look at page 6 of Judge Mojapelo's letter, he compares what the private lawyers, the accused, and their private lawyers produce daily, and what he doesn't get. And he refers us to paragraph 26 of the judgment, in the Aglioti case, where it is recorded that the running record by the private recorders was available simultaneously by the following day, while the supply of the official record was delayed by weeks and up to months. With, please note, substantial parts of the record, including evidence and rulings by the courts, were missing from the official record of proceedings. Whereas the private recording kept by counsel for the accused was complete. Some parts of the missing official record were supplied later but could not be used effectively. The problem of incomplete records is not isolated but widespread in the sense that it occurs in many cases, especially where running transcripts have to be provided. The problem is not new. It has existed for years and discussions with the management of the court have not yielded solutions. That is part A of the present day problem. Part B of the present day problem is that the transcripts are such that judges have to correct them. It sounds like most of the years since democracy of the Hansard, which is now finally sorted. The judges receive the transcripts done by the official transcribers. They are, I quote, often riddled with inaccuracies and errors, including spelling and basic construction errors. Judges who peruse and correct the transcriptions, records and judgments, often have to do so more than once. Often judgments corrected by judges come back to them with new errors, which were not there. Not even Hansard was ever that bad. New errors which were not there when the judgment was corrected for the first time. Considerable time of judges is taken by having to correct the judgment over and over again. There appears to be much better programs in the market which provide for reasonably accurate recording and faster and fairly quickly automated transcription. The lives of litigants and judges that need access to recordings could be made easier. The related problem is the one of the missing court records, which he also raises. This is another problem, it's the present day problem, which I think you were commenting on. But, Chan, you know, I'm sorry, it sounds like the problem is the DOJ staff. I'm sorry, starting with the court manager at the South Gauteng, now replaced.
Thank you.
Minister, again, Advocate Gianni will try and deal with the issue. I just want to speak just very briefly to one or two things. The first issue relating to the contract of dimension data or DIDATE is we can confirm that that contract is in fact in place. And we can also confirm that it is supposed to ultimately give us the transcript and all of those things in good time. I can confirm that. The issue around the information being kept up there incorrectly and sometimes left out and all of these other things, I think issues that I'm quite happy that we go back and we look at. Given the fact that we had problems, and maybe that's the record I think we need to put clear. We at some point had a contract called Snella, was it Snella? And when we terminated the contract, we can accept that the termination process of that contract was not done very well, so much so that it left us with some of the issues that I think sound like what Judge Mutapilwe is talking about. I am not aware, at least it hadn't come to my direct attention, or at least I missed it if it did, that we were still having similar problems with dimension data. Certainly, in trying to retranscribe the report that were done by Snella, that we were able to recover and retrieve, those problems were the problems that sound like I am fully aware of. But those problems, to my knowledge, were problems that were akin to the Snella regime. Not that they were caused by Snella, but they were akin to the termination of that contract. So to the extent that those problems continue under the dimension data contract, I think it's a matter that I can commit that we'll go back and we'll try and understand what is happening and we'll see what we can do about that. And that's the only issue that I just wanted to remember.
Then there was none.
Okay, well, I'll come to the Midland one. Let me then come to the Midland one. With respect to the Midland one, we have the project manager amongst us who I am happy to hand to, who can then speak to the issues. But no, he's not a project manager, but he was coordinating the MELA project for the department.
See, I think what the DJ said, I wouldn't add anything on the dimension data, but just to say that the server has been replaced. I think that's what you can confirm.
Okay. If I may come to the issue, the project is not merely the company, but the project that the department initiated was the off-site storage project. When we started the project, the whole idea really was that our ports were running out of space in terms of file storage. In fact, the situation was very, very chaotic because I remember visiting the Cape High Court where files were really getting out of the building. I remember visiting the Devon Magistrate Court where files were just on top of each other. I remember visiting the Johannesburg Magistrate Court where files were simply thrown into the basement, very dark, no lights, nothing. There was not even an order in which those files were at Johannesburg Magistrate Court.
Yeah.
So the department then decided on this project. But the way in which the department started the project, first of all, we started with pilots. We did two pilots. One was in the Krugersdorp Magistrate Court, and another pilot was in the Pretoria Magistrate Court. In fact, it has been a great idea that we started this, because when we started this pilot, we didn't know that the Pretoria Magistrate Court would bend down. And once it bent down the project, I could receive it. Because many of those files that were digitized and stored offsite, we managed to recover them, as opposed to some files which were not stored offsite and some actually went. Now, given the lessons that we learned from the two pilots, we then extended the project to the Johannesburg Magistrate Court, to the South Gauteng High Court, to the North Gauteng High Court, to the Durban Magistrate Court, as well as the Cape Town. But in all other courts, this project, I think, has been running well. But I need to mention to the committee that this was the first of its kind. It has never been done before. So we can't really say we knew everything about the project. Now, in the case of South Gauteng High Court, it is true that the files that we had agreed to as part of phase one were excellent. But simply because some of these files, the way they were stored and so on, to really be accurate, you have to come page by page by page, and it's almost impossible. If I can take particularly the portfolio committee members for the basement of the Johannesburg High Court, I think you'll best appreciate the difficulties that we've had. And as a result, some of these files were excellent. Unfortunately, when these files were taken offsite, the service provider had invented an offsite storage in Midrand to lock these files. We ran into a cash crunch. And as a result, we couldn't pay the invoices as fast as we would have preferred to. Now, there were problems between the service provider and the landlord. The landlord decided to take legal action, lock up the storage and so on, and he is paid and so on. And that's where I think we started encountering problems with this particular aspect of the project. I am happy, however, to indicate that the landlord has been paid. We have settled the debts, the files have been released, and the project is proceeding. The only thing I think that needs to be done is that this project is a five-year project. It has a number of phases. When the Director General initially approved this, phase one, we didn't factor in the possibility that this file could be exceeded. And once we reached this point, given this situation, our procurement people advised that we needed to apply for a deviation to trigger. So I think the only thing that we'll be working on in the next week or two is just to get that deviation approved by pleasure. No, it's not approved as yet, because I think we still need to get documents to the Director General and create a good pleasure. In a week's time or 2 weeks' time, I think we should get it approved so that everything is better. But I think by and large, most files are obtained, and I think most of the problems are sorted. And we can submit a formal report just to
My worry is that I think we may be talking past each other. Our visit to the Gauteng South High Court on the 20th of March, which is a month ago, was that things were not all right. Okay? The judges did not have access to documents in court records. Reason? Not because the documents were locked up somewhere in Midrand. They never mentioned that to us. This is a new factor that Mr. Sabi has mentioned. It wasn't that they couldn't get access at Midrand because the service provider had not been paid and the landlord had locked the building. That's the new factor. The issue was that the documents, the judge is sitting in Joburg, the documents are in Midrand, and you presumably don't just walk in and pull out the document you want. So my worry is that what Mr. DeVee's response talking past Judge Mojapelo's concerns. So that's my worry. Chair, I was going to look, we've gone on to Gauteng South. I was going to make a proposal. I mean, we've got this lengthy 57-page slide presentation from, I think, the regional head to the queries that we raised.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why it was necessary. I mean, I don't see her here. I don't know if anybody's going to present this to us. I hope they're not.
What I was going to suggest on Gauteng itself is that we say to the department, look, we're giving you an agreed upon time period. Then we're going to convene a meeting where we will have Judge Mochapero, any other judges from that division, on the one side, and we want to then basically hear from the department and the judges that they're happy. Mm. That's the only way we're going to solve it. There's no point in doing what is happening now, Chair, is that I Judge Mochapelo was very polite and everything, but he clearly wasn't happy. But we did have to sort of extract the unhappiness from him. It wasn't that he was breaking down our doors to tell us how unhappy he was. But there's no point in and we had to ask him for his letters to the JP and to the DG and so on. And we ourselves saw that things were not good. Okay. So this document, according to this document, I don't see any report in this document that was a challenge. It's all an explanation. It's all of the things. So you read this document, it's all fine. I mean, my own response in I think the court manager, as the Svart said, has been that was a problem, has been replaced. But the acting court manager, I was not impressed with that more. In Gauteng South. But Chair, I wanted to suggest it's maybe something we can, I mean, the department can comment on. But the only way we're going to know if the problems are solved is if we have the judges and we have the department and they jointly together tell us we're happy. You know, the judges tell us we're happy. They're the people who are dispensing with justice. Otherwise, they're going to come to us and complain. The department are going to send us 57-page documents and come with other explanations, and we're not going to know whether the issue's been resolved. So I wanted to make that as a suggestion, and that we give the department a reasonable period within which to be able to deal with the issues, so that we are able to have the judges and the department together and the DG together as head of the department, and we are then going to be able to hear from Judge Mochapero, Judge Satchwell, they're happy. No problem, they accept given the budgetary constraints, but everything has been done as much as it can be. That's what I want to hear. And I would suggest that as a solution to Gauteng South. Otherwise, we're discussing.
Very good. My support.
I support the suggestion and to give a reasonable time. There are many various issues there. But probably the most pertinent is the fact that their workload has increased over the 3 years. It's doubled amount of workload. So it's a challenge for everyone to accommodate that increased workload.
When he arrived, DJP Mochapelo said the figure was 250 cases being opened. Now it's at 850.
So
that's a challenge.
So what?
Cases being
enrolled.
Well, I gather it's per annum, or is it per month? I'm not sure. I'm reading from my notes.
But the case load is, it's 10,000 cases or something.
This is probably per month. Or per week. Per week, yes. Probably is per week. All right.
How much time does it need? Because there are so many different issues there.
Yeah, there are.
You know, there might be some that can be resolved quickly, others that might need a bit more time. But I think
just one, to give you an example, Dr. De Villa, he took us physically through this passage, and he said to us, that door is supposed to stay locked. Now, this passage is access to the judge's chambers. And he says, come with me. And he opened the door and he said, there you see. And we stepped outside. And outside is where the public. So any member of the public can open and come in. And he says, it's not supposed to happen. Now, you know.
So that's 6 months at least, so.
Well, yeah.
I think the issue is, if you look at the DJP's correspondence, I mean, it goes back to February 2011. Okay, so it's over a year. I think there's reference to the fact that he's been actually complaining for the last 6 years. I accept it might be idealistic to expect the judges to say to us, in the presence of the department, that they're happy. But we need to know that stuff has been done. And my experience with respect, e.g., with the bureaucracy, is that people talk past each other. And people pretend they're doing things when they're not. And they'll assure us that they've attended to something, and whereas what they've attended to is something different to what they were meant to attend to. So, Chair, I think the important thing is, and I think we go up there to save costs for the department and the judges, airfares and things. And we have a meeting, and I don't know, I think 6 months is a reasonable time. But not a progress report. It's basically, we have this meeting and we expect it as much as possible to be sorted.
All right, DG, together with all the issues we've raised, there's a certain Mr. McQuenya raised the issue that National Archives is not taking up records and files as they should do and create necessary space within the court's precincts. And so these files are building up in National Archives for reasons that we don't understand or not doing what they should do. So if DG Sindhana can talk to the National Archives and ask him why that is so, failing which we will call him here or her and be made to explain. We can do that. It's not beyond our means. So together with everything else.
Pending our meeting where we want to hear the judges say, all is sorted and we are happy. It is my view that your problem lies with the DOJ staff. We've heard about the court manager is the key person, and I think the judge is right. You need a CEO class person running a court that size. But in addition, let's not forget that people have been caught red-handed in criminal activities down there in that court. They get arrested, they're back after a day or two, carrying on peacefully, in a state of presumable suspension, but nothing. The judge says nobody's ever been convicted. I saw some other stats of yours. But he says some of them caught red-handed, in bad criminal. It cries out to the heavens that in a court of justice, people have been caught red-handed, just continue working there. So you've got a problem with your staff there. And then I sent you earlier the thing with the taxing masters at the Sarabong High Court. There are only three taxing masters. Two of them are married to each other. When the one is off sick, the other one is not at work. The other taxing master is new and unable to do complicated taxation, and they don't really work after 1 o'clock. Okay. And the attorneys can't get that. I forwarded them.
Something that can bring about clarity of justice. If you're going to be depending on the lawyers that are responsible for the case to create a duplicate file for you, that's supposed to be dealt with in court, and that's the situation that I'm now exposed to. So I think the meeting is what can make Chinese about the whole range of problems that have been brought out. the newspaper I was working, half the time people have got to go like 4 levels, 5 levels up with the lift not working. The cleanliness, I mean, when we were there, we wanted to go to the bathroom, there's not this one. The condition of this one is horrible. Maybe when tried the other one, something like a kilometer away. Yes. So I think those are also pertinent issues that can be sorted out like overnight, and they just need to be monitored. Somebody needs to go in there, whoever has been employed to come and clean, let them clean, and whoever is supervising, let them supervise. In other words, it actually goes to issues of performance and what you do, stuff that is not really performing very well. The other thing that I wanted to still make a follow-up on CEO, I mentioned the position of the CEO of MPN, which I think is a question that needs to be answered. I would really appreciate it if that question can be answered.
I know some of your questions have been dealt with. We're still dealing with South Gauteng, and once we move on South Gauteng, then we'll deal with the master's office in Cape Town, the CEO of the NPA.
Yes. Okay, I did ask some questions earlier. I mean, I think we've done housing stuff on the way.
Can I just finish quickly? One thing that I wanted to ask is, like with this company, then it's just dealing with the files and then it's trying to do off-site storage. Why do we always only depend on service providers to do work for us? And I'm actually asking this question in the context of the fact that here's a court that is running, it has got a lot of records, and space becomes a problem. Then we think in terms of off-site storage. And then what happens is we bring in a service provider. A service provider does work up to a certain level, and then it becomes a frustration. What one would actually want to ask oneself a question is why we have to be depending solely on service providers. If the money ran out, where's our staff? Couldn't they actually continue to do their work? Because I imagine the voice treatment can still do our own scanning within the court. If, of course, the court do have the treatment. Because that's another problem that I've actually experienced. The judges don't even have computers, which is a problem. And one other thing is with offsite storage, it's supposed to be better. So that the records are there within the court. So that it does not really necessarily become a frustration to judges when they have to access the records. Offsite storage normally is supposed to be a backup just in case there is COO fire.
Thank you. We're still going to get the presentation on the budget. And because obviously there's a concern about the allocation of the budget of 37.6 million with expenditure forecast to 59. It seems to be quite a large average training support. Maybe you can comment on that when you deal with the budget issue. Thank
you. With regards to the meeting that we are now planning within 6 months' time, I would just like to also get for that meeting the budget for South Gauteng High Court, but not just the amount, but the breakdown, so that one can actually look as to whether it was spent appropriately and where possible monies can be transferred.
I think you've got all that. Let's move on to outstanding question.
Yeah, I'd ask questions about the vacancies, and then I think that the issue can then be added to that of the CEO of the NPA, who the acting national director said is the department's responsibility to fill. And there's also the issue of the is it Mr. Johnson's position, which is also acting, has been for a while. But if those issues can be looked at. And then I did notice in your document, the question I'd asked, have you actually got the money? I mean, these vacancies with your vacancy rates are for funded posts, both in the department and the NPA. But you seem to be taking the money and using it for other things. And then I see that the R on this document you gave us, the response to the annual, to our report on your annual report, on page 15, 16,
2017, there are senior management service posts that were being currently advertised filling. That's the first lot, and then there was senior management posts for future advertisements. But all of those dates have passed. Even the ones that were still scheduled for being advertisement. Proposed interview schedule for the Chief Director of Corporate Communication Services. The interviews were meant to be on the 17th of January this year. Tentative appointment dates, all of them 1st of March. I want to hear from you that all these posts are full. Only acceptable if they're vacant, if the person did take them and then passed away or left or something. So there was a warm body that came in and they've now become vacant.
Thanks.
Thank
you. Let me first start with the MTA bit. It is true that I am accountable for the MTA for reasons that I will gradually understand, but I am accepted that I am accountable for MTA. So to the extent that the appointment of the CEO of the MTA, I play a significant role. And I'll then speak to the role that I have played, but then indicate why we still do not have an appointment. The MPA on the one level is an organization that is somewhat independent of the Department of Justice and has to run like that. In other words, there has to be consultations between myself and the NDTT in terms of levels and the type of support that the NDTT and now current acting NDTT will look at this position and say, is this position practical? Is it supporting the organization? Is it supporting the citizens and then all of those things? So, and maybe if we take two steps back and remember why we had the CEO in the NPA in the first instance. We never had the CEO in the NPA. Mm-hmm. We had the CEO in the DSO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we doubled up, or at least that CEO doubled up for the NPA as well. So we never really quite had the CEO in the NPA. But then we became comfortable with that condition and we decided, well, we like the idea of a CEO and we will continue to have the CEO at the NPA. So we then said, okay, fine, in this process, let us then fill the position of the NPA CEO, and we then went through the process and we advertised, and just as we were concluding, I did say I had the responsibility to consult the NDPT. It doesn't make too much sense that I could be running around appointing people left, right, and center and finding that those people are not adequately utilized or supporting adequately the NDPT. A lot of conversations happened within the NPA environment, which we're beginning one to challenge whether, in fact, it is actually appropriate to have the CEO for the NPA and create two heads in one organization, because you then have the administrative head and then you have the functional head. And that conversation went back forth to a point where it was then elevated to our leadership. After much deliberation, it was decided we still want the CEO, or at least we still have to have the CEO. And however, we think the level is like a little too high. We want to bring the level down, and so that's where we are now. So we had advertised the position at a particular level. The job was evaluated, was re-evaluated, because it was originally evaluated at a particular level. But after much of the deliberation, the job then had to be re-evaluated, taking into consideration all the deliberations that it takes at a particular level. There is time that is taken when all of this is happening. So ultimately, we had to then pull out that asset, because for all intents as I understand it, the position, I can't recall specifically, I could be wrong now, is now to be re-advertised according to the new job evaluation results, and then can then be filled. In the interim, or well, in the meantime, this Honorable House is probably aware, maybe not, that there was a deputy CEO at the NPA at the particular point in time. That deputy CEO at the NPA then was seconded to DERCO and is currently an ambassador somewhere. Okay. And so it was then felt that, given the fact that that person is now going to be coming back, maybe it's easier that the position be there. So that's just the history behind the position, which then explains the delays that we've then experienced. Because, of course, the NDA must take stock of its total staff complement before it brings in a new person. So that's, and I'm hoping that I'm capturing the history correctly, because I didn't realize that that was going to become a question. I would just head to that. So where we are going to be advertising the post and filling it at that level, I think it's level 14 now. It was originally sitting, no, it's level 15, it was originally sitting at 11.
So 16 is seriously high, isn't it?
Well, 16
is bigger. DG. What was the issue of contention, much more than history, was just the reporting lines. And we actually asked him that, based on the worry around stability within institutions where these reporting lines are not clear, even the role of the CEO is not very clear. And I think that's the kind of clarity we're seeking.
Thank you very much. I'm allowing to say this, the way I feel like I want to say, and I mean, the role of the CEO has always been clear. It is an administrative role. The NDTT is the head of the organization for all intents and purposes. So there is clarity there. Where I think the officials in the NPA may say it's heavy, as I expect, also as an accounting officer, because it's also heavy for me, that it is heavy that they would report to the NDTT as the functional head of the organization and also report to the accounting officer who's sitting next door, literally. Now, I can accept that, but it that does not amount to lack of clarity, at least in my mind anyway. I'm not suggesting that it is not clear for them, but it doesn't amount to lack of clarity. There is definitely clarity. Is it acceptable? Maybe that's a different question altogether. And the question is it ideal that somebody who's sitting in a different organization reports to a person who's sitting in a different organization? So I would argue it is not ideal. It never was ideal in the first place. But that's how legislation was structured. But it was never ideal. So,
the NPA makes the DG the accounting officer. Yeah. Hence all the problems in the top.
But Wade explained to us that the CEO, DG, the CEO takes over the corporate and admin work, freeing the NTPP. That was they stressed that the NTPP now will be free to focus on the core functions.
Yeah.
Well,
the reason why there was a CEO acting around was that if the CEO belongs to the CFO, and so the idea grew on to have a CEO, but actually the accounting officer.
just a few of them here for 3 years. The truth is, I mean, I share the DG's concerns. And I share the DG's concerns because SEO, and that's why I think the question is critical. You basically report to two people. You report to the DG, and you report to the NDPG. If they cooperate, it's well and good. If there's meeting of minds between the two, it's well and good. If they don't, it becomes very difficult. I'm a mere public. That is why the DG initiated the process of the amendment of the NPA to try and resolve. So I think we are going through those processes to resolve the situation.
If DG and Chair, on our program, we've got your CV on our legislative program for this year, an NPA amendment, or where we are looking at this, so we are coming up.
Well, that would involve.
That's good. That's a plan.
Like, I've seen everything that I've asked since 2009. I think.
What is happening, Chair, in the interim? While we wait for this legislation, I mean, I will remind Mr. Bassett that we've had a legal practice bill on your program for the last 5 years. So just because it's on your program for this year doesn't mean that...
it's on their program.
That's what I'm saying. He's trying to say, oh, it's coming soon, it's on their program for this year. So I'm saying there are other bills on their program that have been on their program for many years.
You
have been rescued.
You
want to
go back in?
Because presumably you're then spinning the post in the interim, and then the law change can come later. What's then happening? So you're re-advertising it when?
I can't recall the exact date. I don't want to tell less.
No, you said just the thing of that we want to know, I mean, as with these posts on that I referred to, I wouldn't be surprised if not all of them are filled. Even though they were advertised and everything else and dates were given. So we want to know basically within what period will we have a CEO for the NPA. And then obviously the other question then is the CFO for the department, when is that post going to be filled? And then these posts here that you gave us nice dates when they were being advertised, the shortlistings and everything, we need to know what's been filled, what hasn't, and if it hasn't been filled, why.
Well,
it's only like 12 posts on the one lot and another 5 on another lot. Maybe they better report then, I suppose.
In the meantime, we can come back on the exact date of advertising the post. My understanding was that it was going to be advertised probably in the next week or two, but I will...
It's not so much advertising, it's when will they fill the post. Can they give us a reasonable period that they will be able to come and tell us?
It's about 4 months.
Okay. So July?
Something
like that.
So when the department comes for the budget review process, we will confidently expect them to tell us that they've got a CEO for the NPA.
Let me then speak to the CFO.
Don't they have a CEO? I thought that was
his.
We went through the process, we interviewed,
security checked, the psychometric checked, and we are now just waiting for the result of the final security check, and then the thing can go to Canada. So for the CFO, we are all but done unless something horrible happens. Thank you. And then with respect to the...
You sound very good at the job.
But I don't have a booking for you. Where must we find another offer?
One outstanding question that was asked right at the beginning, which hasn't been answered, and that is in regard to the assessment of course. We could have an answer on that. Are we going to have another round for questions? Because there's another one that I really need to answer.
All right, let me address you on that. The book today we'd finish at 4. The program says the DG and her entourage are before us tomorrow until 1:30 or 1. So, you know. Yes.
Okay. Then the other positions, I can't remember all of them, but I can stick to the DVD corporate services. We advertised, interviewed, had some issues, and...
Yes, can maybe just come off with the DVD issues. Yeah. I'll be certain that it isn't my second mistake.
Okay.
Yeah, give a report.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking, you know, but you keep going back to it.
Then we've dealt with the chief state law advisor, and then
the role of the department in the proposed constitutional court assessment and review.
Okay.
All right. The department may not have a role.
The only role that the department will play, in fact, there are quite a few roles that we will play. We'll just facilitate one, the appointment of the organization and all organizations that will undertake the assessment. You would have seen that we published the terms of reference. A while back now, I think the closing date for those terms of reference is the 4th of May.
Closing date?
Yes. There were terms of reference that were published. I can't remember the date. It was the 4th of May, 2012. So there's that which we facilitated and we issued. We will then do the bid evaluation process once the 4th of May has come and gone, unless we receive other requests for extension, which we can't think about because we haven't received. Then the next issue is then once we've done the appointment process, then we are out of the process for that period. They will then have to go and do the assessment according to the plans that they would have submitted and so on, and then we'll again get back to the process when they have provided us with the report, because then we will facilitate the workshops to then discuss those reports that would have come out of the process. That's basically the role of the department as we understand it. Might the role change? It is quite possible that the role may change depending on the responses that we receive post the 4th of May, but for now we take it as that's our role as we see it. Then the other question was we suddenly had the Supreme Court of Appeal, which was not originally in the discussion. There is a very clear reason for that, and in fact it that reasoning was then augmented by some of the comments that we received as we were engaging on this process before we went public.
The Supreme Court of Appeal, our view is that most of the cases that come to the Constitutional Court for a decision, they would have been dealt with at the Supreme Court of Appeal quite extensively. It then makes sense that we start there and go with the case all the way to the Constitutional Court. It's just that only consideration that it was felt that we do need to see the case at the beginning right up to the end when the Constitutional Court makes the final determination. With respect I forgot to include one responsibility that we will then have after all the workshops have been held. It will then be to compile a report which will then have to go back to Cabinet, as this work was done, I think, with Cabinet's blessing, to then inform Cabinet what the outcome is. And mind you, the document not only just looks at the judiciary, it also looks at the ability of government to implement the decisions of the court. So in light of that, it is then important to then inform Cabinet that whatever the outcomes are, and probably start an engagement, if depending on the finding, one way or the other, on how to carry out those findings of the court, of the assessment. But please remember that the document is not only about the assessment. I think the excitement has been about the assessment. The document carries much more than that, and that's the conversation that we are really looking forward to having. Some of the comments on the document, but also some of the information that we and input that we can receive from the public and possibly from members of this house would also just help enrich the conversation around how we want to do this work going forward. So the document isn't just about assessment. We are thoroughly entertained though by the fact that everybody paid enough attention to the assessment part of the document. Thank you.
Okay, DG, you're quite correct that there was some very positive aspects to the discussion document, but obviously the concern was around the issue relating to the Constitutional Court and then later to the Supreme Court of Appeal, particularly when the words review were used by some commentators and officials, I think, or even the minister or someone. When I was at the press conference when it was announced, review's got a very specific purpose. Assessment is something different, but be that as it may, let's talk about an assessment. The quite correct terms of reference have been published. Now there's going to be an appointment process. Is that going to be run by the department? What criteria will be used? Because as we know, your universities review academically, they review judgments and give comments. That's already out there. On what basis will you appoint a tender? Is that something that you still need to engage upon? How are you going to appoint a specific, or what criteria are you going to use? Are you going to say, well, is it a research institution? Is it an existing university? Have you talked into that term? And so I think we need to be not part of the process, but you can't be part of it, but it's a great concern of ours as to how this process is going forward. But I do want to emphasize that I am aware that the document covers broader issues as well. Our concern is about that one issue. There are other very positive aspects to that discussion document.
So our concern certainly isn't limited to one aspect of the document. There are some positive ones. There are some sort of very confusing, obfuscating, and quite frankly, contradictory ones. But the question I have is, you say the SCA is where the case goes. It doesn't go from there. It goes from the lower court. The SCA is only sees the case once it's been decided by a lower court. So I don't understand the logic at all. To me, not logical at all. And what is the ground for only going to the appeal court? If you want to start going with the case, you start at the lowest court where the case stops.
Okay, if I may, we realize that the case starts much lower than that. So I don't think we were under any misconception about that. But we also realized at the time that we are talking about a program that of work that is going to happen for 18 months. And if we are talking 18 months, we must also be realistic as to where do we start and where do we stop. And we and that's why I said matured rather than commence. I said the case matures at that level, and the Supreme Court of Appeal will deal with all the other issues that are not necessarily Concord-related issues, but then will raise constitutional issues which are then Concord-specific issues. And it is only because of that reason, and that's the reason. And indeed, we do appreciate that. The other question I think that was raised is the criteria that will guide how we appoint. In our minds, I think the criteria is quite clear. If you read the terms of reference, you are already getting the criteria. The criteria is very specifically set out there. And so it's not going to be a difficult thing for all intents and purposes for us to be able to look at that criteria and to make the assessment. And in fact, I think the minister did say that we think that the biggest response is likely to come from academic institutions anyway. So more or less, if the responses come from big research institutions or academic institutions, it is likely that they will meet the criteria. So I don't think it's something that is hidden, it's transparent, it's out there, it's published, and I'm quite happy to sit with the honorable member in case the criteria is not very clear.
We see in your document that $2.5 million budgeted for that exercise, correct? Now does that mean so these people are bidding, what, they're going to bid you all sorts of fees and prices, and you're going to look for the one that's cheapest and best? How many do you think you can squeeze into $2.5 million? Is it going to be two, three? Universities, what do you think?
Well, surely they will have to sell themselves.
In fact, we shouldn't even be talking about that, because now everyone is going to school.
Yeah.
If Honorable Swat is anything to go by, it means this assignment is not going to be that difficult, so maybe we can fit in a lot in 2 million. But our anticipation, though, on a serious point, is that it may very well be that we would need much more than 2 million, but we had for now budgeted, I think, in that region. We may need much more than 2 million.
We don't need the exercise at all.
Oh, we do. That is one area that I beg, Chair, through you, I beg to disagree. We have all the reasons set out in the document that we do need this exercise, and we stand by the reasons.
What are your time frames?
Everything put together should be concluded within an 18-month period, at which point we will then be
beginning.
When we advertise the term of reference.
Chair, just to clarify to you why I'm actually interested. When something is contentious, you need to know by when you will have the final product. With the kind of questions that you actually come across. That's not me who said you're contentious.
No, I did.
That's my observation.
Johnson, you look like you want to say something. Okay. Which question was that?
Honourable Member Jeffrey raised a question on vacancies.
Yes.
And if we
have a written report.
No, that was the one in this document there, this particular one.
Okay.
My question was, with both the department and the MCA, do they have the money for all these posts?
Okay.
Can I respond for the department? when we budget, we make provision for the
total
approved funded establishment. We've had a vacancy rate of, let's say, around about 10%. In the previous financial year, our expenditure was 96.6%. So there was a vacancy, a saving of the budget, it equates to the vacancy, to the vacancies. So our basic position is we don't have positions on our establishment which is not funded. What you will see tomorrow when I do the budget presentation, you will see that debt savings we utilize somewhere else. We shift it at the end of the financial year. We will disclose it properly in the annual financial statement. The annual financial statement is a preparation thing. We will disclose the funds. So overall, when we reflect a particular expenditure pattern of 99.9%, within the law, within the employee prescriptions, those savings were redirected at the end of the financial year to cover other areas of overspending.
Now, if I look at the slides, page 29,
mm-hmm.
I mean, can we just get an updated explanation? This is on the presentation, the DG's presentation. So you've got intimate senior management services, a vacancy rate of 20%. What are you doing with that? That's too high. What is OCLO? Chief Litigation Officer. 35% vacancy. Strategy unit, 45%. I mean, I know it's a small number of posts. It's 24 posts, and you've only got 13 filled. And then, you know, risk management and security, which is a problem, 16%. And then internal audit, and you do keep getting qualified audits, 13.4%. There are 22 vacant posts. You know, the master's office, and then what is ISM?
IT.
44%. No wonder your IT is not working. So I think particularly those that are over 10% need to be addressed. We need to know what you're doing to build them. So I don't know if they can do. Johnson or the DG can give it now, but otherwise, can we get it? Those with a vacancy rate of over 10%, an explanation as to what is going to be done to bring it to below 10%.
Dr. Levy?
No, I'm not going to make this question.
If we're turning this forward, we're going to do the master. Tomorrow.
We start with it.
Okay.
Start with it. All right? TG? Dr.
Levy? No, I was meant to answer a question on the regional head free state.
Oh, yes.
Hard
working.
He promised to give us a dry hole.
No, just to first of all apologize for the length of time it took to fill the post. I think the portfolio committee did express a concern about the fact that Mr. Mabula was still there, the former regional head, and that Mr. Isaac was basically doing two jobs, heading both the Free State and the Northern Cape. We are happy to report that we have concluded the process. We have interviewed. What particularly delayed us was because there were two grievances against the filling of the post. One was withdrawn, but another resulted in an arbitration hearing, whose outcome, fortunately, was in favor of the department, which enabled us to conclude. And I think we are happy to say that by the 1st of June, if the DG doesn't have big concerns about the submission before it, by the 1st of June, we'll have a new regional head in the Free State.
But what's happened to Mr.
Mabula? Until there.
No, Mr. Mabula is retired.
Oh, he's gone. Because he was told he was coming in every morning and sitting in his office.
No, Mr. Mabula is now retired.
Okay.
So
I'm with that.
I think there's not much. There's not much.
Like And then, Chair, thanks for that. There were a whole lot of issues, I think it was in the researcher's paper, on the response to the Auditor General's report. And it's basically, I think it's the department, I mean, the complaint basically seems to be from the Auditor General's report, dashboard report, financial year ending March 2012, there's still a lot you're not doing. And I think if you can let us have your response on that. It seems like it's not all SMS employees signed performance agreements. In November 2012, the department reported that 140 senior management members had signed, about 18 had not. No names of provided information on the employees. But I think if you can look at through your chair at those issues, because they do affect your audit, whether you're getting unqualified audits or not. So that's my interest in that. Chair, I had another issue which was also on the question of informal mediation that we raised yesterday with the MPA.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at your, I think it's from your strategic plan, I think. But again, it's in the research report of the summary and analysis of the Department of Justice for Constitutional Development Budget. And basically, look, DG, as we know, we've been raising a problem with this concept of informal mediation for court cases. And basically, and the MPA are lumping diversion and informal mediation together. We're happy with diversion. It's provided for in legislation, particularly the Child Justice Act. But informal mediation is nothing. And we've repeatedly said in annual reports that we're not happy. And you, as the department, have said you're looking at policy. Now, in this document, it takes from, I think, your strategic plan, it's got alternative dispute resolution, introduce court-based mediation and arbitration and commence in selected courts, commencement date April last year. And then you've got under column completion date, you've got rollout April 2012. Draft court-based mediation rules being compiled by the rules board. These rules will be piloted in selected high courts, regional courts, and magistrates' courts before April 2012. We're now in April 2012, so this should have all happened. Before being rolled out to all courts to introduce mandatory mediation in civil court proceedings. Okay, that's civil court one. Maybe I've misread, I'm just saying it's now relating to civil court, whereas my concern is informal mediation in the criminal court. And the issue there that you were meant to be coming up with a policy on that. Because at the moment, we just don't know. The figures from the NPA side are getting bigger in terms of the number of cases being settled by informal mediation, and we don't know what is going on and what the regulation is. And if I can just remind you in terms of, if I can find it, it was our report, I think in November, where was it, June, where it was that there was a specific thing relating to the department. Yeah, it's the June, our report, which is on the 87th or 6th of June. The NPA told the committee it's monitoring the use of informal mediation to detect patterns. And then this is what is relevant to you. The department is finalizing policy guidelines. But the committee believes that there may be a need for legislation to regulate alternative dispute resolution methods that include both diversion and informal mediation. But in the last year's budget process, you told us you were finalizing policy guidelines on informal mediation in criminal matters. We need to know more a year later. And then not to make the mistake I think I've just made of the relationship that other stuff. We're not talking about civil, it's criminal.
Thank you very much. The issue on policy on mediation in some my formal mediation, I'm going to request Advocate Diane and Advocate Kasana to speak to that. I think the issue that we spoke to, and I could be wrong, was that the rules board for the court of law were working on the mediation rules, which, as I understand, were finalized in December. Was it December? But you can speak. Chair, to leave with you. Good night.
Thank you, Chair. The mediation rules were finalized by the previous rules board, whose term of office ended in December 2011. And there was a new minister before the end of the term of office. However, in the rules were some few aspects that required to be reconsidered, that it was ever in terms of, by the rules board, it was kept. It's in such a way that the minister cannot do anything with the rule. Even if they have to put one sentence or one word, it must go back to the rules board to do it and come back to the minister, etc. The minister does not have any rulemaking power. So the rules have been taken back to the new rules board, which have since been appointed, and the meeting has been set of this month to file those few aspects in relation to several matters. The request from the Chief Justice was that the rules board must also consider rules for the criminal matters, because the rules board does have authority to develop rules, even for criminal matters, etc. And I think the idea from the rules board perspective was that the following rule after this process would then focus on criminal matters. There was an issue of consultation that took place. But what has happened is that the draft of the rule for the criminal matters would basically be guided by the restorative justice policy framework, which has already been developed by the admin side. So there has to be some form of an alignment. And I think there's already a process underway which would basically guide the rules that will inform criminal matters. The idea is that there's already been consultation in terms of the civil rules. That's why there was already a definite commencement date, etc. And the rules board is concerned at the second part of the criminal rules, which obviously they would develop once they have done the consultation and informed likely by the policy process underway. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
If we've got a bit of time, now that Mrs. Kosana is here, could we have on record, don't look at people, the position regarding Magistrates Commission that you explained off the record, if we could just have it on the record about staffing for Magistrates Commission, because when you went here this morning, we asked the DG why the Magistrates Commission budget wasn't being increased, given that they need extra staff. Could you just put it on record for us what you are doing to assist the Commission?
I've explained to the panel member that we've increased the capacity of the market court. We've given them additional researchers post from the state advisors. But what we have done, we've worked around the existing budget and the existing establishment. The secretariat of the Magistrates Commission is part of court services. So we've looked and reported areas where there was greatest need and proposed where that required. Hence, we reported the Magistrates Commission that we have been able to meet the capacity demands of the Commission, not through creation of new posts, but through rearranging our personnel within our own environment, etc. And that was also in hindsight of the fact that process underway to have the full complement of the Magistrates Commission as there are additional vacant posts which have been filled for quite some time, and now it has become apparent that the five additional posts which the Act requires the President to nominate those members are now going to be filled, and that would basically require some adjustments in terms of what is happening. We have not requested additional funds from the DG because we'll live within what we have currently.
Thank you.
thank you very much. By the way, I was just looking at the list and I realized that there was a question that related to the indicators. We in the presentation, we had just set up the indicator, but did not speak to the measurements and all of those issues. I just want to highlight to the honorable member that the indicator comes from the strategic document. And in the annual performance plan that we also submitted on the 7th of April, it sets out each indicator, each per year, per period, and all of that is set out in here together with all the targets. And then if you go to towards the end of each section, you will then see the explanation of how we will define the indicator and all of those things. So from a SMART it's the annual performance plan for 2013. It's throughout the document, so you could look at any indicator, you will see that it has the same thing. But if I may just use the exact example that you are referring to, it's on page 18 of the document, which is the presidential what lines 3.3 of page 18. It goes to quarter by quarter performance as well.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And then the other two questions also coming from the same honourable member was they related to the use of internal audits in the department and in terms of doing the risk assessment for the development of the risk plan, which will then guide the organisation. I fully agree with you, only we do not get the risk assessment done by the internal audits. The internal audit is risk-based, so its work is also guided by the risk plan, which we develop through, we have the risk management section in the department, whose responsibility it is to do that, and then the internal audit will then audit our business based on that risk plan that is undertaken in that way. And then finally, Chair, just on the issue of FITA, if I may request that we deal with it tomorrow, but if the committee still has a lot of time, we can. But thank you very much, Chair.
I have a question about the
I think I had a number of questions which I haven't responded to. I think that relates to the Honourable Adams.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to run quickly then.
Oh, okay.
But do you find the man is up long? My question to you constantly is whether you wish me to use the last what is now only 2 minutes. To leave some thought on the witness prediction in the midst of the department for them to mull over. Would you like me to do that, or do you want to leave? Because you know what I'm going to say. Do you like me to leave tomorrow?
Sorry,
Jay.
No,
it's always
like
most of the
people.
On
witness?
No. Teaching. And to all of the departments, in fact. Witness prediction fit that present in the NPA, where it is not supposed to fit whatsoever. Under the Witness Protection Act of 1998, the Office for Witness Protection is established in the department. You should have it. It is supposed to have a director. That director is supposed to be appointed by the minister. It is that director who exercises all powers, functions, and duties under this law. So the situation which we have at present is illegal. And the NPA, having heard this yesterday, indicated that they would be too delighted to divest themselves of the duty. But look, it's just all wrong. And there are reasons for this, and it is understood to be international best practice, that you keep witness protection away both from the police and from prosecution, because if witnesses are perceived to be too close to prosecutors, the theory is that their testimony can be influenced to the detriment of the proper administration of justice. The law says it should be in your department. Its office should neither physically, I know where it is, but I won't say where it is, should neither physically nor in other respects be there. It should be with you. And I understand, but you can confirm or correct, that the post of director office for witness protection has been vacant for 4 years, that's what I'm told, without being filled and occupied, and that an acting NPA official essentially runs the outfit. So that seems to me to be entirely wrong, both in law and in principle, and maybe you would like to address us on it tomorrow, if not now.
Yeah, thanks. Because just to remind Mr. Johnson that he was meant to give us the details of the underspending in the SEA, but presumably he'll give us that tomorrow as part of the budget presentation. Then also as part of the budget presentation, I know it's not law, but I would be interested in knowing where the money for the... you deal, DG, with the bills that are coming, and your budget deals with the things you've got to implement that's law already. The stuff that's in between, money for the information regulator, where is that going to come from? I can't see it in the budget. Maybe your response will be, well, because it's not law yet, you don't have to provide, but when where is it going to be coming from? And then I think, Chair, one has to say something about the TRC. And look, I appreciate there's been some progress, but it needs to be resolved. And I think the progress on the regulations is disappointingly slow. And I'm happy that there's some progress in terms of finding people. I appreciate there is a target, which is to have it all resolved by the end of next financial year. But we just to tell you, we are watching you on that.
Well, the pathetic performance is from Department of Education and Health, not so. Yes, that's what so pathetic. Could advise us in addition, Chair, that the proposal about the bursary that you and I discussed, it's a proposal from the Institute for Justice Reconciliation, very good proposal, you thought and I thought. So is that going to be a reality? What is the Department of Higher Education or lower education?
No, not really.
I've raised it in committee before. Because, look, we have a billion sitting in the President's Fund. And, not to repeat the whole story, but it's scandalous when all the victims have not been found for reference. But in addition, there's still money left in to do something with. And we have to follow the TRC's recommendations. One of those was the community rehabilitation. Another one was education, health, and so on. It's perfectly scandalous that all these years people have never been helped. But the thought was, because it is now such a big amount of money, it has accrued, because in addition, it is so many years, the fraction of time, of course, I mean, these are now the grandchildren of victims. And the idea was that you then use as much money as that for a bursary, or more than one bursary. But I have discussed.
If I may answer the questions on TRC, with the DG's permission. I know that in terms of final operation, our presentation said that we had a target of 500 people, and that we have found 212 people. I'm happy to report that actually as of this morning, since we prepared the presentation, the number is grown to 429 people, which means effectively for this financial year now we are left with the challenge of finding 446 people. The truth really is that our approach in the past was a very bad one, because really all that we did was to appoint a tracing agent and try and manage it from the national office, and that didn't work. But once we started using our network of regions, really work well.
Frankly,
last year this time when we were here, we had found less than 10 people. Now today, you know, we have found in 12 months 129 people and paid them, not only found and paid them. So I think that's one. But two, just on the rejuvenation, I think I'm very, very happy to just report that in my view, we have finalized our consultation on education and medical assistance. We are now preparing a submission via the DG to the Minister for Cabinet. So that, and I think we will share the details of the regulations. But I think the portfolio committee saw the regulations that were advertised for public comment and so on. So I'm happy to report that that part of done. What is not done, what is being dealt with now is regulations on housing. So in my view, education and health, we are just waiting for cabinet approval and then we start going. So we have had two very successful meetings. I know that part of the coalition want to make some submissions to us, but we agreed on the deadline of the 24th, I think, if I remember, for the final submission to be made. But I think of this month. I'm also happy to report that the Director General signed the contract engaging the IDT. The IDT is now working on the criteria to select areas for community rehabilitation. They have some rough criteria that they've developed in the last 2 weeks. We've been working flat out with them. I think we need to go through internal processes just to consult. But the criteria, we'll really be looking at the number of incidents per area, level of atrocities. They'll be using the poverty index and so on. And then they'll be dispatching community liaison officers to engage communities just to conduct some needs analysis. And part of the reason we are conducting needs analysis is because, you know, since 2003, some of the areas have become more developed than others. For example, one of the examples that are always made in our deliberation is a place like Soweto. We know that there was a lot of activity between 1960 and 1994 in Soweto. But if you look at Soweto today, it's not like any other township, so you can't justify why you would prioritize Soweto for community rehabilitation and so on. But I think when that criteria is ready, I think we'll present it for the portfolio committee. Thanks, Chair.
All right. I do want to turn.
Yes, tomorrow we need continue to present, and we may also bring up issues of transformation and to what extent to actually touch on it. We might have when you talk in terms of transformation, you will take into consideration, for example, vulnerable groups, and really, if it's possible, to some extent, disaggregate your data so that you actually understand, in terms of participation and inclusion, who are the players. You see, for example, what's supposed to happen in terms of transformation, you should have, when it comes to issues of women and men, gender focal points, gender mainstreaming and things like that. You know, just to touch on those issues so that you can actually assess them, have a feel of whether it's taking place or not. And I'm sure some forums when such issues actually address, you might have actually managed to realize that there is that loading that the performance is putting place in this office. So then if it has to happen, it must be the responsibility of the DG and it must be part of the DG's key performance area. Okay, thanks.
All right. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, just one announcement before I adjourn. The Minister of Justice will appear before the Justice Portfolio Committee next week on Thursday, the 26th of April at 14:00 hours. 26th of April. Thank you. Tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. Thank you.